Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journey series, interviews with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers. Today, a conversation with Annie Lamott. She's the farthest thing from a prototypical born-again Christian, which makes her spiritual sojourn all the more fascinating. Stories of her spiritual journey are told in her new book, Traveling Mercies, Some Thoughts on Faith, published by Pantheon. And wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
You know, you and I had talked about your born-again experience, if we can use that phrase, off the air and on the air in the past, but you'd never really quite come so public with it. And I'm wondering what went on with you and your publisher and your editor in terms of the decision that now is the time to tell this story. What was that like? If I was a fly on the wall, what are some of the conversations?
Well, you know, I'd actually come out of the closet as a Christian in operating instructions, but I mentioned it in passing really a number of times so that it's sort of like kind of breaking the ice with your parents when you try to use the word damn or something. And, you know, and you say it and there's this hush in the room. It was like that. It was like saying the words and trying them out. And I wouldn't say it went over very well, because mostly my readers are not Christians and of any sort. They've mostly been sort of left-wing activists and intellectuals, and which I am also. Finally, though, and I referred to my church a lot in Bird by Bird, but so in passing, though, again. And then the first novel I wrote, Sober, has a born-again Christian character. The book was called All New People, and I made the mother be a born-again Christian. Mm-hmm. Although my mother then used to come to readings with me and say, "That's not me. I'm not a Christian," because it's such an unpopular thing to be, you know, certainly in the Bay Area. And so then I didn't feel like writing about what it means to be a born-again Christian, but I wanted to write about my faith and my faith walk and how it manifests in my life in a kind of daily and ordinary way. And I really can't do that without talking about where I was before, like 14 years ago, when I hope to be more ecumenical in my spirituality.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing story, a wonderful journey, which you describe. You say, "My coming to faith started not with a leap, but with a series of staggers." Mm-hmm. And it's real interesting to me. You had told me off the air one time that your grandfather, I believe it was a Presbyterian missionary. Mm-hmm. But your father and mother were not at all kind of interested in that expression of faith and God. Mm-hmm. What was your family like? What was the home into which you were born in terms of its own kind of theological cast?
Well, the theological cast was that there was none. And so the theological cast was that we were, my parents were both very political and very involved in civil rights, and my father was a writer and very, a great participant in the West Coast literary revival of the late 50s and 60s that was the tradition that the beatniks and the wonderful counterculture poets sprang from, like Froilán Getty and certainly Ginsberg from New York, but, you know, found another home in that milieu. And so they're very cultural, very music-oriented, very political, as I said, and social. And what we did as a family was sit on go to church. It was a unifying thing we could all do together every Sunday. But so, as I wrote about in Traveling Mercies, I always found families who did go to church, because I had this secret thing going on inside of me, which was that I believed in God. And I did not mean to, and I felt ashamed of it, but I knew I was in touch.
That's amazing. Now, you write quite fondly of your experience with a Catholic family that actually provided a little bit of context, although you describe this God as the God of the borderline personality. What did you see in that Catholic family that intrigued you about God?
I saw that their family worked, even though, as I wrote about, the father would have too much to drink and then hurt people and hit people, and that was very crazy. But on the surface, at least, the parents were very much in love, which my parents weren't. And there were just hundreds and thousands of babies. I mean, I can't even guess how many children they had. And I thought that was so great. And the mother was beautiful, and they went to church every Sunday. The kids went to parochial schools, and they were Catholics. And they used to just, no pun intended, they used to just lord it over us. And they would, I remember lying in bed with this friend, and I was always a bad sleeper. And so at about midnight, she'd say, well, you know, Annie, you're going to rot in hell for all eternity. And then she'd go to sleep, you know. And I'd be awake till dawn, thinking about what that could possibly mean. And but I loved church. I always loved church. I loved Catholic. I loved the Mass. It was in Latin back then. This is almost 40 years ago.
But you didn't tell your parents about this.
I told them I went to church. I didn't tell them how much I loved it. I made it seem like it was kind of a daycare experience, and I was being babysat by them. They were going to church, so I had to tag along. But I loved it.
Now, you also had a teacher named Sue that was a great teacher and then had a strange thing happen in her life.
Yes, but before then, even more important was that I became friends, and my best friend, Pammy, my eventual best friend, we shared this Christian Science home where she was friends with a second eldest daughter, and I was friends with the eldest. And we both found this level of acceptance and tenderness and pleasure in us that was missing in the rest of our lives, so that the mother, Lee, wouldn't look at my crazy, wiry, fluffy hair and go, what are we gonna do? She'd go, you are so beautiful. You are such a great looking kid. And I felt like either she's delusional or she's lying or it's true. But and the part that thought it might be true was a very, very quiet voice, but I hadn't heard it before. Mm-hmm. So I heard it. And she used to lie, the mother, Lee, used to lie in bed with me and really quiet me to sleep, really like the way you do with a freaked out horse, because I always had this crazy mind. I was very sensitive and I was really smart, and I was worried, you know, I was just a worried child, and she used to lie next to me, just kind of rub my back and talk to me about how safe I was, safer than I could have ever imagined. And I thought, again, she's delusional, she's lying, or it's true. So then, let's see, when I went to high school, Pammy and I were at this little hippie high school in the city I started going to when I was a sophomore. And we'd had this very hip, cool English teacher named Sue, who took us through all sorts of pretty avant-garde writing and poetry. And all of a sudden, when I came back when Pammy and I came back for our junior year, she'd converted. She'd become a born-again Christian. And she still looked like a hippie, and she had this long brown hair, and she wore all purple. But she had the New Testament with her, she had the Bible with her everywhere she went. And she used to get all these students to meet with her under the trees at lunchtime for Bible reading. And it was the same thing as the Catholic thing, saying, you know, we're okay, you're not. There's 10 of us here, and we're all fine. You are going to rot in hell for all eternity, however. But then they'd all look at you kind of and feel sorry for you and wish well for you, but they wouldn't actually try to convert you. And it was devastating. That was my year of atheism.
Join us for our next podcast with Annie Lamott. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse.